Greening Law presents For Our Kids Legal Podcast, starring Robert L. Greening and moderated by Jordan Pryor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our fourth episode of For Our Kids Legal Podcast. I'm Jordan Pryor, and as always, I have attorney Robert Greening with us. Today, we do have a special guest. Today, we have Tahira Merritt, attorney.
Hi, how are you?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I like your coat, by the way.
Thank you.
So Tahira and Robert have worked on several cases together, but kind of tell us a little bit about y'all's backstory. How do y'all know each other?
We've known each other for
30 years, I think.
Going on 30 years, I think so. We used to work at the same law firm when we were much younger, and we worked on cases together involving sexual assault, sexual abuse on the civil side. We worked on some landmark cases together against the Catholic Church involving the sexual abuse of minors by priests and clergy. And we've just kind of, now we have our own firms, but we collaborate a lot together and work together on some of these sexual abuse cases. And it's really all that Tahira does is sexual abuse cases. So I wanted her to come here today and give everybody the benefit of her knowledge, and then also kind of talk about some of the things that we do together.
Okay, awesome. Was there anything you wanted to add?
No, I just want to say that, you know, Robert and I, because we have put together a team working on sex abuse cases, I think we kind of know the directions of the cases. We know a lot of the defense lawyers on the other side, and we're able to bring some expertise to the area that I think the normal practitioner would not have or would not understand.
Right. Okay, well, so we're just gonna go ahead and just dive right on in. Again, we understand that this is a very difficult topic, but we do feel as though that this is good information that all parents need to be armed with in order to protect your kids. So kind of just starting off, where do you guys see the sexual abuse of minors the most?
Well, if you look at the statistics, unfortunately, the majority of child sexual abuse is from family members. That's the vast majority of it. However, after that group, we see the majority of sexual abuse of children occurring from someone they know, someone that's a trusted person in their lives. A teacher, a priest, a Boy Scout leader, a coach, a youth minister,
a doctor, a psychiatrist or psychotherapist.
Oh my gosh.
So in those types of instances, when you have somebody you trust, the child often is very confused by what does this mean, and the perpetrator is very adept at grooming them. So you know, that's where you see, the stranger danger everybody knows of that we see on television, you know, the abduction kind of situation is very rare. The majority of sexual abuse victims are abused by somebody they know.
And also what's important is not only do the minors trust them, but the way that these perpetrators get away with it, so to speak, is the parents trust them. Because the parents have entrusted their children to these people in a position, generally speaking, of public trust, like what we've been talking about, priests, doctors, therapists.
No, exactly. I mean, where do parents think their children would be safest? At school, at church, with a religious organization. That's often, unfortunately, not the case. And then these days, we also have child pornography. And pornography with, posting the children's images on the internet, and that's a whole different area that's very prevalent these days, trafficking and child pornography.
Gotcha. And as far as red flags go, what are signs that, you know, parents can look out for that their kid might be or have been sexually abused by somebody?
I think one of the first, depending on the age of the child, if the child is prepubescent, which is preteen, changes in their behavior. For example, a child wetting the bed when they've already been potty trained, a child having nightmares or wanting to come back into your bed when they're sleeping on their own. Obviously, signs such as acting out sexually, where there would be no way they would know those words, there would be no way that they should be touching another child in their privates. Those types of sexual acting out behavior are signs of a problem. When they're teenagers, the issues you need to look out for are lying, drinking, using drugs, and those types of running away, self-mutilation, and those types of issues, self-harm.
And sexually promiscuity.
Promiscuity.
Those kinds of things.
Exactly. Grades failing, the grades going down, nightmares, things like that.
And I think the other red flag that parents need to look out for from sort of another perspective is, I mean, we've been talking about how do you tell if your child may have been or is being sexually abused, but what are the red flags that parents should look out for to think maybe their child's being groomed before it even happens? And those kinds of things are very important things to be looking out for to hopefully prevent this from ever happening. And so grooming means, you know, that this perpetrator is preparing the child and preparing the family and grooming them, like getting them used to being around the child
kind
and all that.
Building that trust a little bit.
Building that trust up and all that kind of thing so that they can then act on it and hopefully not be found out. So what are those kinds of things that you look for? Well, as a parent, you know, you need to always sort of trust your gut, for one thing. And I know that sounds crazy, but as parents, we all know, we all teach our own children, you know, if you have a funny feeling in your tummy, then you need to trust that feeling when you're with another adult. And that's something I've always told my children, and I think it's true. And it's a way that they can understand that, right? Mm-hmm. But then also you as a parent, if you have a funny feeling about somebody in your tummy, same kind of thing, usually you should trust that and make sure that your child is not around that person by alone or anything like that. But then in addition, you know, just always make sure that any organization that they're in has a sexual abuse policy. Mm-hmm. If they don't have a sexual abuse policy, they have their head in the sand and they're not in the 21st century, because that's what those policies are there for. For instance, the Boy Scouts of America has a policy that it's called Too Deep Leadership, and you cannot, I was a Boy Scout leader, you cannot be with another Boy Scout without alone without another Boy Scout leader being with you. I mean, there has to be three people at all times with you. Or there has to be, I can't remember the rules there, but I want to say that it doesn't necessarily have to be another leader with you, but you have to have at least
another adult
with you at all times. So there's no question that anything's going on. And that's just, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it keeps everyone safe. And so, Tahir, you want to add to that?
Well, I think the other thing is you need to be mindful of who your children are around. Mm-hmm. And as Robert said, if you get a kind of icky feeling about someone, you know, go with that feeling. But also, adults that act childlike, that want to be around children rather than adults, that's a red flag. An adult that wants to be overly affectionate with your child, hugging, wrestling, things like that.
I heard gift giving has been a big problem.
Gift giving, yeah, gift giving. And the other thing, and just from the child's point of view as well, a lot of these perpetrators are keep secrets, try to get the child to keep what's happening secret. You know, this is our secret. Mm-hmm. Don't tell your parents. And I think parents, the first issue with your child is to develop the trust where you can say, there's nothing that you can tell me that I'm going to be concerned about.
So
feel open.
I'm not going to punish you or anything about anything that you tell me. But the way the secret thing starts generally is it starts with a secret that's benign, right? Like, let's keep this between us. I gave you ice cream today. Don't tell your mom. And then it
escalates to alcohol or drugs, mm-hmm. and then the abuse. So your child needs to understand that that there should be no secrets, that they would should feel comfortable telling you everything. Mm-hmm. Another thing I think parents can do is if you're checking out an organization, like you're sending your child to daycare, you know, there's resources on the internet these days where you can check out that particular daycare or school's record on violations at that facility. So there's those types of resources, and parents really need to do their due diligence on that. I've had several daycare cases that if you look them up at the Texas Department of Licensing, you wouldn't want to put your dog there, let alone your child there. Yeah. So, I mean, I think parents really need to do their research. There's so many more resources available, and there's really, you need to do that, and you need to arm your children with information. For example, even the youngest child, you can tell them, no one touches you where, for girls, no one touches you where your bathing suit is. Mm-hmm. You know, no one touches you in that area. Or for boys, no one touches you anywhere without your permission. And especially we're coming up on the holiday seasons, a lot of family gatherings, no one should ever force a child to hug someone mm-hmm. that they don't know, because that teaches them that it's okay for a stranger to give you a hug.
Interesting.
And so they need to really claim their own bodies, that mm-hmm. my body is not for anybody to touch. If I don't want to hug that person, mm-hmm. you know, oh, go hug Uncle Jim, you know, give him a hug, give him a kiss. I think these days you need to be really mindful of what you're saying to the child, mm-hmm. that it's okay for Uncle Jim, even though you don't want to touch him, it's you have to do it. So it sends kind of a mixed message, especially to a small child. So those are things that I think parents need to be, you know, it's hard enough raising a child today, but we have so many more things, the internet, smartphones, and we're bombarded by images of sexualized images these days, even for the smallest children. So you really need to keep that dialogue open with your child and talk to them early and frequently about, you know, no one touches you there. Right. You know, you tell me if you're not going to be in trouble.
So, and you had mentioned earlier that there are in some instances where a parent can also abuse a child. So, if you're the spouse, not the one that's doing, you know, the abuse, but if you're the spouse, what do you look out for? Because I feel like that's even harder to catch.
It is. I think you have to look out for some of the behavior changes that we've talked about.
Okay.
A child being withdrawn. A child not wanting to spend time with their parent mm-hmm. is often a clue.
Okay.
And so, you know, obviously the first thing I would tell any parent is if your child comes to you and says someone's touched them mm-hmm. inappropriately, believe them. That's the first thing. Say, I believe you and we're going to get help.
And so, you know, we have the precaution of teaching them, you know, if someone touches you, you let me know. Are there any other precautions that a child or a parent, it doesn't really matter, are there any other precautions that you can take to avoid this kind of sexual assault?
Well, I think we teach them in the stranger danger situations to run away and scream and yell mm-hmm. and, you know, bring attention to it. But when it's somebody they know and they feel like I'll get in trouble if I tell on that person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's even more extreme. The perpetrator says, if you tell, I'll kill your parents or I'll do something mm-hmm. harmful to you or your parents. So the child is living in fear. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to really start educating them earlier in life to understand and make them feel empowered mm-hmm. that they should say something. Even if it's not to you, they can tell a teacher. Mm-hmm. They can tell another family member. Mm-hmm. They can tell the nurse at school. They can tell someone, a doctor. They can tell someone that this is happening to them and go from there.
And as far as legal recourse, how does that work for something like this?
Well, obviously, the first legal resource you should take is to call the police. I mean, that the law enforcement is there to help with this. And I think it's very important for parents. They get very frustrated because, you know, you call the police and then all of a sudden all these police officers are there and they're separating your child from you as far as getting statements from them, and the parents can't be in the room, and it's very stressful on the parents. So if you can get someone on your side early, there's often a victim advocate in the DA's office or with the police. I often tell parents, a lot of times female victims don't feel comfortable speaking to a male detective. So ask for a female sex crimes detective. There's detectives that are specialized in reporting and receiving information about sex crimes. And there are also nurses that specialize in SANE exams, which is sexual assault nurse examiners. There's their nurses very specialized in how to gather that evidence, if any. So that's from the criminal standpoint.
Well, and I think one thing that needs to be said also is that people don't know this, I don't think, but I think it's the family code that says, you know, the Texas family code says if you know of a child that's been sexually abused, you have a duty to call the police.
Right.
To
report it. If you have a reasonable suspicion a child is being abused, you have a legal duty to report it. Now, there are mandatory reporters. Mandatory reporters are like doctors. If a child tells a doctor, teachers are mandatory reporters.
Oh, I think attorneys are
attorneys are mandatory reporters as well. So, I mean, those.
But the law, the family code, I mean, it seems like it's, to me when I read it, it's mandatory for everyone to
It's
tell.
Mandatory for everyone, but it's really a misdemeanor, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's a protection. So if you see a child being harmed, for example, you're in a restaurant, you're seeing a child being beaten or something like that, then obviously you pick up the phone and say, this child's being harmed and I'm reporting it. So, you know, that's what that's in place for. So.
Gotcha. And which, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a statute of limitations for a minor in this kind of situation? Isn't it a little bit different than it is for other cases that you guys might take on?
Yeah, recently the statute of limitations for child sexual abuse in a criminal case has been eliminated. So there is no criminal statute of limitations
that's
if you were
Texas.
Abused as a child in Texas.
Okay.
It varies from state to state, and that's the other thing. If the perpetrator takes you out of state, that could be a federal crime.
So, this last question to hear is specifically for you because this is something that you specialize in. And obviously this is very traumatizing for the child, and we all know that, but how does this affect the family?
It's devastating to the family because you feel helpless as a parent, and you feel guilty. You feel, I should have seen it. I should have done something. I should have known. And I don't know how many mothers feel that way, and you see it more in the mothers than the fathers. The fathers just are angry and don't really know how to talk to their children after there's an outcry. But it does. It really breaks families apart, especially if the perpetrator is someone that the parents trusted, and that trust has been violated in the most horrific way. And It's very, very difficult, and the parents have a long road ahead of them. I would say, and I always tell parents of young children, that if they confront it early and they get their child the treatment that they need, that will go a long way to recovery, but it's not really recovery. It's from going from a victim to a survivor. And because it's something, unfortunately, that's going to affect them the rest of their life, but you don't want to wait until you're 30, 40, and 50 years old, or even older, to make an outcry. And I see a lot of those cases. I see people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who were sexually abused as children by a priest or a minister, and they are just now talking about it. And they have lived a life of really destruction of themselves and a destruction of their loved ones, that they didn't know why that person was acting that way. Why were they always angry? Why were they acting out, you know, sexually or with drugs or alcohol? And when you put the pieces together, it makes sense. It finally makes sense. But it does affect the whole family, and really the entire family has to heal from it.
I think one thing that we also see, Tahir and I have seen, is that the family, it's real important though for the family to have a united front once the outcry is made, and to be supportive of each other, and especially supportive of the victim. There's still a lot, even with the culture that we have now with the Me Too movement and all that, there's still a lot of what I'll just say ignorance of people who would rather, still rather their loved ones sweep it under the carpet and don't mention that. We don't talk about those kinds of things. And therefore they're not supportive of the victim. And that's just like abusing the victim again, in my opinion. So I think it's super important, if this is happening to someone in their family, to just remember, even though you may not understand, try as hard as you can to be supportive of the victim.
Well, and the other thing also is, if the perpetrator is still alive, the likelihood that this person has not done it to another child or will not do it in the future to another child, that's just nil. I mean, so one of the reasons you take action in filing criminal charges or filing a civil case is to make it known that that perpetrator has done this and that he can be punished, or he or she can be punished, and other children can be safe. So it's important to also empower the parents to say, you know, you must do this because you are protecting others.
Yeah, because I would say every single case that I've worked on of this nature, and I know Tahira can say the same thing, once one victim comes forward, it's like a floodgate opens, and there's usually almost always other victims, because these people make the victim think they're the only one. And so how could they ever come out and outcry? They've been threatened or what have you. Once they have the bravery to do that, you see it in the media all the time. When one victim finally comes forward, then others feel empowered.
And then they always try to twist that narrative, I feel like, and say, oh, you guys just wanted to come out to get the money.
Right.
I feel like that kind of completely diminishes the whole point in stepping forward.
Right.
It does. And you know what I tell, because that's a common theme. Mm-hmm. That's a common trope, really. Because I think there are so very minuscule amounts of false reports. And the fact is that really no one would want to publicly come forward to say, my priest raped me, or my doctor raped me. And
Or my uncle, or
exactly,
the scout leader.
Exactly. So it's never about the money. I don't think there's any amount of money we could obtain for our clients that they would take to not have gone through that experience.
Well, I'm actually going to add in an extra question, because you had mentioned something whenever we were off camera about, you know, we have all these preventions for victims, but what can parents do to ensure that, you know, their sons and even their daughters, because it does happen, but, you know, what can parents do to make sure that their kids don't end up being, you know, the perpetrator here?
Well, I think that if they're seeing signs that, and unfortunately there are studies that show that if you've been abused as a child, that you might act out against other children. So certainly if you see your child exhibiting behaviors that are inappropriate with another child, with a younger child, for example, then you really, it's incumbent on you to get them help immediately, because if you don't address it, it's going to come out at some point. And you also need to teach your children the interaction between boys and girls, and boys need to be taught how to properly respect girls. If they say no, no means no. And by the same token, girls need to also, unfortunately these days, especially college age girls. I mean, my daughter's just started a school at a university, and we went through a whole scenario, and I think it's important for parents of girls going off to college for the first time. We know that statistically rapes in college occur that first semester, the first fall semester, and not to have open containers of drinks, because they're putting things in their drinks now. Not to leave their friends alone with someone they don't know. Not to walk alone, you know, always walk with somebody. So I think there's really common sense tips, mm-hmm. but I think parents are afraid to, because they get the eye roll, right?
Yeah,
they're afraid to say that, but they do listen. Mm-hmm. Even though they're rolling their eyes, they do listen. So say it. Gotcha. Don't be afraid to say it.
It's better to say it and they're annoyed than you don't say it and something like this happens.
Well, you're arming them with information. Exactly. Now, can you prevent every bad thing from happening? No, you can't. But you can educate them to have that little light bulb in their head. Well, I remember what mom or dad said. I shouldn't go out and be on the street at 2 in the morning and, you know, whatever. And you know, there's also, just in the media, you see all these reports of women coming forward, girls coming forward, boys coming forward, and they're blamed. What was she wearing that night? Or what, you know, why were you out so late? And those kind of things. So we really need to have a cultural shift and change the perspective of, you know, it's unacceptable. Rape is not acceptable.
Right.
If you hear, you're in somebody's company and they make a rape joke, you need to speak up. Mm-hmm. You need to say, don't say that in front of me. You shouldn't say it in front of anyone else, because here's why. Mm-hmm. You know, all that does is perpetrate a rape culture.
Right.
So.
That was, again, we appreciate you for stopping by and doing this with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
This is Tahir Merritt. And again, thank you so much for just being here with us for our kids' legal podcast. We hope that this information was very good for you guys. We hope that maybe you guys learned something or had some takeaway something, or even got the chance to sit down and watch this with your kids. And we will be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you.